Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour 2, G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for making us part of your day as we're set to talk with John Owning of Pro Football Focus. You can read his stuff. I mean, he's doing a heck of a job. He's watching the tape. He's breaking down all the numbers. He's now doing a podcast with Nick Harris of the Star-Telegram called Cross Chop, which I am enjoying. And a good afternoon, John. How the heck are you?
Doing well. It's a nice, cool day out here in Sacramento, so I'm feeling good. How about y'all?
Well, yeah, we're feeling pretty good, you know, trying to figure out what to make of this Cowboys team and if they got any chance in HE double hockey sticks against this Packers team with all these injuries and how they've done so far. What are the numbers saying about how much of a mismatch this is?
I mean, honestly, it's not looking great, especially because the Packers' strength kind of line up with the Cowboys' strengths. I mean, the Packers' defense has been playing at an exceptionally high level this year with he who must not be named, Rashawn Gary, and the rest of the crew. And then I think the Cowboys' defense is playing so poorly right now that you can't really project any offense to do poorly against them. They're just too many miscommunications, too many coverage busts, too many big plays occurring. So it's just, on paper, at least, a really, really bad matchup for the Cowboys, especially when you throw in the fact that they're going to be without CeeDee Lamb and Tyler Booker.
Yeah, what would your offensive game plan look like with that in mind? I mean, I want to say they need to be a run-first team even more now. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you got to be run-first, and then I think they should major in under-center runs so that they can really get the under-center play-action game going. You know, the only thing that I can see them trying to do is trying to draw up those linebackers to the line of scrimmage to create voids between zones, to try to create, you know, a lot of extra space between the safeties and the linebackers so they can get some intermediate passing game going. Because the problem with the Cowboys without CeeDee Lamb is they don't really have a receiver that can generate separation on their own with just their route running. So Shoddy and the rest of the offensive coaching staff has to do a really good job of kind of scheming up opportunities for them to get separation. I think the easiest way to do that is by bumping up the under center play action, using a lot more motion at the snap. You know, you just can't rely on these guys to go out and win their one-on-one or generate separation in one-on-one situations.
When it comes to this defense, John, I know you've been breaking it down and you and Nick did an awesome job on the Cross Chop pod, but man, I mean, for our listeners, what'd you see against Chicago? And I know that Shoddy's mentioned maybe making some personnel changes. What would be some that you'd like to see?
Definitely. I think there's definitely a few. You know, I kind of put out a tweet going over the changes I would make, and I tried to keep it within reason because I think throughout Eberflus's entire career, he's kind of shown that he's going to maintain his overall schematic philosophy really no matter what. When he's had great defenses, when he's had bad defenses or anything in between, it's kind of been with the same scheme hierarchy. So I try to stay in there. And the first thing I think that's obvious is take out Sam Williams and insert Jadeveon Clowney as that close side defensive end. I think Sam Williams has left a lot to be desired, both in the rushing the passer and defending the run situations. He's against the run, he's extremely undisciplined. He's jumping out of his gap. He's peeking into his wrong gap. He's not setting strong edges consistently. And that's really hurt the Cowboys at times. And then as I'm rushing the passer, he rushes so often. I kind of stole this from my friend Landon McCool, but he kind of rushes like he forgets he has hands sometimes. I put up a GIF on my Twitter of him doing a bull rush, and he doesn't drop his pad level at all. He doesn't try to use leverage. He just kind of rushed chest to chest and tries to get into really just like a shoving match. He's not using any of the mechanical advantages that a defender has when they're rushing the passer to his advantage. He's kind of just kind of going through the motions a little bit. He has his most successes when he really uses speed, but he just doesn't use that often. And it's really disappointing to see from someone who is so, has so many physical advantages. He's so fast. He's so big. He's so strong, but he just does not use them to their optimal ability nearly enough. And then another really obvious one, I think, well, maybe not obvious, but with Deron Bland, seems like he's coming back this week. I think you insert him for Kyer Elam, not Roddy Stewart. I think Stewart has shown that he's been a pretty good, really slot defender for you. He's one of the few guys who hasn't had a ton of really miscommunication or bad coverage busts since he's been inserted into the lineup. He's done some good things in run support. So I think Kyer Elam is the guy you kind of take out and put Deron Bland as that outside corner and leave Roddy Stewart in the slot. And then another one, I think that all three of your starting linebackers really have given you a lot to be desired from their linebacker play: Damone Clark, Jack Sanborn, and Kenneth Murray. I would insert Maris Luafau in for one of them. I think the easiest way to do that is to insert him for Clark, so you can put him at the Sam linebacker position and really just make it easier so you're not moving players multiple positions and potentially creating even more confusion in that scenario. And another one I would do is, especially since Eberflus has really seemingly insisted upon his safeties being interchangeable, where he can play in the box, play deep, play too high, play single high, play in a bunch of different situations, and that just does not play to Donovan Wilson's strengths and his skill set. He's more of someone who plays really, I think, exceptionally well when he's in the box, but when he's playing deep or split safety responsibilities, he just doesn't have the deep awareness of all the different routes and combinations and how they develop and how to maintain space and how to stay over the top of all the passing threats, be deeper than the deepest, all those simple rules. I just don't think he really does at a high level right now. So I would insert Wanya Thomas, even though he's going to give you a little bit less against the run. I think he'll shore up at least a little bit against the pass. And then some of the little schematic differences I would do is I would definitely increase the blitz rate. We currently, I think, have the either second or third or fourth worst blitz rate in the league. I think it's like a 18.6%, I tweeted. And I would like to see that bumped up. You know, it's not going to be something that we're going to get into the high 40s or mid 40s or high 30s. But if we can get into the mid to 20% range where we're going to be just right below the average of the typical NFL defense, I think that would be really positive, a way to create pressure. Because the Cowboys, when they blitz, they actually have one of the highest pressure rates when they blitz. They had a top 10 pressure rate on blitzes last time I checked, but they just don't do it enough. Another way that you can kind of generate pressure, if you don't want to really harm the harm that amount of numbers that you have in coverage, is use sim pressures. And by sim pressures, that means you're bringing a second level defender, but you're dropping one of your defensive linemen into the flat or into the hook curl zone, for an example. And I think that's really a good way to mess with opposing offensive lines. And it's a good way to generate pressure with still only four rushes while keeping the continuity of your coverage intact. Right now they're at the, third lowest, I believe, in the NFL at 9.1%. I would like to see that bumped up just a little bit to maybe the 15 to 18% range, get them still below the NFL average, but still.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Much better than what they're doing right now. And then from a coverage point of view, just play more man coverages, more cover one, more two man, and kind of limit the cover two and cover four stuff that the Cowboys have been really struggling to execute throughout this entire season.
Hey, John, the thing that Stephen Jones before, well, after they made the Micah trade, they talked about, you know, Stephen Jones came out and talked about, you know, generating pressures, you know, manufacturing pressures, stuff like that, creating pressures. And I was talking to an NFL defensive coordinator last night, and he was saying, hey, they talk about these things, and you mentioned it. They just don't blitz. He said, if they're going to manufacture pressure, you're not going to do it with four rushers. You're going to do it with multiple rushers. You know, why would they tell us that that Flus can manufacture pressures and then not blitz this season?
I honestly have no idea, and there's been a few things where it seems like there's a disconnect from what the front office and the executives want and then what the coaching staff implements. I mean, it's on the other side of the ball, but I think Hunter Lipke is a really good example of that. You know, they extend him. They talk about how he's going to be such a big portion of the offense, and he's going to have a real role, but he hasn't really touched the ball, whether it's as a receiver or a runner. He's just been kind of a lead blocker. And in my opinion, that's not even what he does best. He does best stuff when he's being involved in the short to intermediate passing game as a check down guy, as a guy who's maybe a short yardage runner in those situations. And he's just not using that fast. And that seems to be a big disconnect with the front office. And I think it's kind of similar with the blitzes. And, you know, it really surprised me when Jerry and the executives kind of said that, because Eberflus has never been a guy that blitzed a ton. Even when he blitzed a lot for him, it was still it was still around league average, maybe barely above league average blitz rate when he was blitzing a lot for him. So it just didn't make much sense when Jerry was saying that. It kind of just seemed like he was saying something to kind of try to maybe quiet down the skeptics of the Micah trade, or I don't know. It just seems to be a disconnect there.
John Owning, Pro Football Focus, with us here on The Fan. What do you think about Donovan Ezeraku and how he's played?
I like a lot of the things that he's done against the run. You see him implementing different techniques depending on the player types that he's going against. When he's going one-on-one against tight ends, that's when you see him really take on and use shrug techniques or slip techniques after, you know, stacking to shed the block, and that's really good. And then when he goes against bigger offensive tackles that he know he can't overwhelm at the point of attack, that's when you see him slipping blocks a little bit more. He's trying to stay slippery, not let them get their hands on him so that they can create movement and kind of widen the adjacent gap. So that's been something I really like to see. But as a pass rusher, I think he's just missing a little bit of the details. I posted a play that kind of epitomized the issues that Donovan Ezeraku has, and it was when he was going for his cross drop, one of probably his primary move that he used in college to create pressure. And he was shooting his hands and entering into his little Euro step where he feigns like he's going to one side and then he jumps to the other. He's doing it from too far away, so he has no way for his cross-chopping hand to land on the outside hand of the offensive tackle. It's too far away. He needs to close the distance, and what I've heard a lot of coaches say is step on the offensive tackle's toes. Not only does that put him in range to land his cross-chop on that offensive tackle's outside hand, but it also incentivizes that offensive tackle to shoot their hands at him, which is, again, going to give him a chance to parry that strike with the chop, work to the edge, and generate pressure. I just think he's missing those little details, those little nuances of, you know, spatial awareness where your opponents, when to throw your moves, how to pattern your feet, what stride lengths do I need to have so that I get into the right area when I'm ready to make my moves. Those kind of little small details. And I think once he gets those things cleaned up, we're going to start seeing the pass rush production really start to ramp up.
Do you have optimism about Neyland similarly, or is this about what we're going to get?
I have optimism about him. I think he's kind of played above my expectations a little bit. He's someone who plays with his hair on fire a lot. He plays with a lot of power rushing the passer. I would like to see him utilize his speed a little bit more to threaten the edge and not just be someone who kind of powers through the outside shoulder of offensive tackles so often. But I really like the stuff he's done against the run. I think he sets a strong edge. I think he gets off blocks well, holds up on block. He doesn't give up a lot of displacement, so I've been happy there. I just don't think he's ever going to be someone who's going to be an 8 to 10 sack type of guy. I think he's always going to be your B-level rusher who's maybe racking up maybe six. He's kind of the, you know, the 5 to 8 sack a year guy, I think, rather than a guy who has the potential to be a double digit sack a year guy.
It's John Owning, Pro Football Focus, looking at the numbers, which I do often. Terrific work over there at PFF. It confirms Kenneth Murray is just, I mean, he's one of the worst players on the team.
Why would have thunk?
Right? And that was the case last year in Tennessee. So I guess my question is whether it's this or the draft stuff that Wolchuk worked on and other people have built off. Does this Cowboys team have a problem with identifying defensive talent?
You know, it definitely seems so in recent years. You know, the defensive talent they have acquired outside of really, you know, Michael Parsons really hasn't gone extremely well. Obviously, De'Ron Bland was a big hit. It seems like they do a good job of finding those, you know, day two, day three defensive backs, but they've really struggled to hit on their front seven players in recent years. And hit really, I really like Donovan Ezeraku. I think he's someone who's going to be a hit, but, you know, Mazi Smith, Marshawn Nealon, I don't think up until this point has really played up to the second round draft capital and those type of things. Obviously, the linebackers haven't lived up, whether it's be because of injury or what have it be. So, it obviously, there's some disconnect there. There's some issues. I hate to put it all on them because there's been like circumstances that they can't control, like Overshown, who would have been a hit, but he has so many injuries and stuff. So it's, I think it's kind of a give and take. There's a little bit of everything, a little bit of bad luck, maybe some misidentification. Also, I think it doesn't help when you're changing schemes so much. So you're picking players for one scheme, and then you get transitioned to another scheme that maybe doesn't optimally take on their skill set. Like a Mazi Smith, for example, I think really fits into that.
Yeah, and John, I think you made some great points there. With Micah coming back to town, what are some ways that you think the Cowboys can try and handle him so he doesn't wreck the game? And what are you seeing from Guyton and Steele at tackle?
Like I said before, I think what you got to do is you have to make him play the run first, and you have to use a lot of play-action passing game where you can kind of slow him up, where he has to play the run first and then transition into rushing the passer and try to give Dak Prescott that extra tick of space and time that he needs to get the ball off. Because if he's straight dropping back from shotgun consistently, Micah's going to win against these offensive tackles. I think both Guyton and Steele have struggled mightily in especially pass protection, even though I think they both did really, really good things as run blockers against the Bears. Still struggling in some pass protection departments. The thing I like, the thing that gives me less pause about Guyton is the fact that he didn't have an off season, and we're seeing him make progress, and the things that he's getting beat are inherently fixable, especially on the inside moves. He just has to fix his footwork a little bit. He's kind of opening his hips a little early, and that's making it difficult for him to transition to sliding back inside when people convert counter inside. Whereas Terrence Steele has like a whole host of issues that are really robbing his ability to be consistent in pass protection, whether he's leaning in his pass sets, whether he's getting his feet too close together when he's kicking and sliding, he's not driving and catching his feet. He's more stepping and replacing, and that's making him, when he gets to the point where he can anchor. If you guys, I know, Brian, you watch a lot of film. Zach, you watch a lot of film. Do me a favor. When the on the plays where you see Terrence Steele's anchor really give out on him,
yeah,
pay attention to where his feet are
real
when
narrow.
The defender makes contact. He has 1 foot off the ground almost continually, and I think that's a lot because he's stepping and replacing instead of something that I think Duke Manyweather and LeCharles Bentley really advocate, which is driving off that back foot, driving off the front foot, and then catching with the back foot. Yeah. And I think that is really hurting and making his anchor look even worse than it is.
Can Dak get it going here against this Packers secondary?
He's going to have to if the Cowboys want to have any chance of winning, in my opinion. It's going to be difficult without CeeDee Lamb. And I think this is a game where, you know, Shoddy's going to have to make his money scheming up opportunities for people to get open. But Dak is playing at such a high level, I think that he can find some success. But it's going to be reliant on him getting enough protection, enough time to, you know, make them pay. If he's consistently having to get the ball out of his hands quickly and having to, you know, we're going to have Ferguson with another 15-catch, 55-yard performance, it's not going to go well.
If you're this front office and you've seen what you have so far in 3 weeks of George Pickens, are you looking at that money you save from Micah and thinking that's a good use of it?
Not right now, no. I don't think so. Just see too many concentration lapses. You know, the week one stuff about how he was really not putting his full effort into his route tree. It was much better week two. But I don't think he's done anything to the point where it make you that he has to be a priority re-signing unless his number, you know, the money that he's going to be asking for has come down considerably. I'm not someone who is really, you know, really knows what's going on about like cap values and contract values and how much they're going to sign for. But just given his play so far, I don't think he's played up to the ability that everybody has really hoped for when the Cowboys signed him.
Hey, John,
traded for him.
Yeah, I want you to, and please feel free to shoot this one down. I ran this past my guys yesterday about drafting, and I was just curious what your thoughts of the fact that for 10 years, Jason Garrett as a head coach is a good evaluator of talent,
And for the last 5 years, your team has been hurt because Mike McCarthy has not been. And as much as the coaches are involved with the draft, is that why you're a little of a top-heavy team right now?
I think that's a great theory, to be honest. You know, everybody talked about, you know, Jason Garrett's issues as a coach, but his ability as an evaluator, a player, a talent evaluator, you know, coming from the son of a scout, he's been in it his entire life. It makes sense that that is a place where he would thrive because he's been exposed to that side of football for so long. So, and I think, you know, Mike McCarthy, there's probably a reason why, you know, the Packers didn't use him.
Yeah, Teddy didn't use him at all.
Why Mike Zimmer, yeah. You know, you talk, I've heard you talk myriad times about how you got to kick Mike Zimmer out of the draft room when he's in there. And same thing with Mike Nolan and stuff. So I think it's true. The coaching staffs have, they've been more, you know, traditional coaching types, not the guys who are really thriving with evaluation. And I think that just comes down to the fact that Jason Garrett has been a part of that almost his entire life. So I, you know, if whether that means the Cowboys front office needs to make changes to the fact where the coaches have less of an input into the draft and that makes it harder, but that's going to be hard for the coaches to swallow. You know, they're going to have someone else picking their groceries and they're going to have to cook with them to kind of use the old Bill Parcells adage. So I'm definitely glad I'm not someone who has to balance those egos in that situation, but I think that's why someone like Will McClay gets the big bucks. He has to make those really tough decisions.
Yeah, I just think that if you're a very heavy, like coach-driven personnel department, that your depth sometimes, if you're not good at evaluating, like Cincinnati is another team, very, very coach-driven personnel department, so you might not have the depth of the roster that you would have if you're just kind of a scout driven.
Get the coaches out of there.
Well, I'm just saying, I've never called a third down defense. I mean,
that's their job. You get them the players.
The scouts are the ones that do it all year round. The coaches really only do it for what is it? You know, a 2-3 month span of the entire year.
Exactly.
So it makes sense that you would rely more upon the people who do this for a living and they live and breathe it every single day because they're going to be able to, maybe they won't be able to tell you like, oh, this guy fits, you know, he's a great bail defender and cover three, blah, blah, blah. But they're going to be able to give you the physical, the mental, the traits, the how they're going to fit into the locker room, all these key details that I think are much more projectable to the NFL rather than, oh, this guy thrives in this scheme, or I can envision him playing in this scheme, whereas a scout can give you a more overall look about who the player in person is.
You're the man, John. John Owning, Pro Football Focus and the Cross Chop Podcast. Enjoy your week four, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Hey, thank you guys for having me on. Have a great day.
Salute. There he goes, John Owning here in the G-Bag Nation.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.